Tonight, we have a special guest on with us, Ruth Ann. Pronounce your last name for me.
Jaggy.
All right.
Woo!
Welcome to the Central Horror Podcast with authors Dicey Grinner and
Chantel Renee.
It's so great to see girls again. Nice to see you. We met last year.
Yes.
That's right. We were in the Texas AuthorCon.
Yes. Yeah.
Your hair looks gorgeous.
Oh, I'm growing out bangs and they're driving me fucking nuts.
Yeah. It's so cute though. It felt real silky.
And you got Alabama hair, probably big humidity going on, right?
Yes, for those of you tuning in, I've been in the dark, but I am in Alabama right now for spring break with my family. And so we are kind of improvising here, but definitely glad to have Ruth Ann on. We can still chit chat and bring her live and in person to you all.
You just gave me an idea for a horror story.
I've been looking forward to it. I do follow your antics and see what y'all are up to. And a little bit earlier today when I was in the kitchen, I was listening to your terrific interview with Meg Hadal.
Oh, yes.
That was a really fun one. It was before your 150th, I think. You guys have been 150 episodes.
We've been busy, yes. Running around. So you are, a little bit of background about Ruth Ann, you all. She is a horror writer, speculative fiction. Is that what it is?
Dark speculative, because I started out in horror, Dicey, and we kind of veered off a little more into even blending genres. So now it goes into dark fantasy, dark romance, but my roots are in absolute pure horror. But like most of us, once you start writing in horror, it's almost inevitable you gotta throw some other stuff in there. It's just too juicy not to. It's too much of an opportunity to not just putting things in there.
Right. How did you get started writing horror?
I always loved the genre. I mean, I've always read it and I've always watched it. And it's what I enjoy, because there's such a range of emotion in horror. And I think for me, you know, I'd read a lot of books and I'd read a lot of the bestsellers. I'm a voracious reader like all of us. And they were always nice to read, but the ones that stuck with me were the ones that had either supernatural aspects or horror aspects. And I started out very young with Stephen King, like a lot of people, and Anne Rice, and, you know, reading the classics, as we call them now, from some of the greats in the genre. And those ones that stayed with me, and those were who I wanted. I thought, if I'm ever going to write in my life, this is what I want to write, because it had such an emotional effect on me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They stay with you long after you finish the page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you have a partner in crime, right?
I do have a partner in crime currently, and she's absolutely fabulous. I write collaboratively with Natasha Sinclair, who lives in Glasgow, in Scotland, and I am in South Texas. You guys are up in Houston. I always say you're north of me, but you're not really. But I'm in South Texas. I'm about 50 miles west of San Antonio. I live on a cattle ranch west of San Antonio. And I do write collaboratively with Natasha, which is really interesting. We've been writing together for a couple of years now with no sign of slowing down.
Wow. How did y'all meet? I mean, Scotland, that's a little...
Well, we published together about 5 years ago. Like a lot of us, I started out in anthologies, and I started out with short stories. And we published in the very first Books of Horror anthology, which is now kind of famous because it started out a lot of people. RJ Rolls, of course, the Books of Horror group is now over 50,000 people. They're just blowing and going, and they're doing the books and brew, and they're doing the different get-togethers and conventions now. And we met literally publishing together in a couple of anthologies. And I had an idea for a story a couple years ago, And I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't quite get some of the ingredients. So I got a hold of Natasha. We were connected because we had done Zooms and different things like in group chats, you know, how you put out an anthro and then you do a party or you do PR for it with a podcast or something. And we really kind of had clicked and I'm like, I got this really cool idea for a story. And I want to write about a house, but I want to make it strange and I want it to have a backstory. And she goes, I'd like to write that with you, but let's do it. Put the setting in Scotland. I'm like, what? And let's use Scottish folklore and mythology. And I'm like, what? Meaning I had a lot of research and reading to do before we even started. My family's Irish, but honestly, I knew very little about Scottish culture, mythology, folklore. So it was about, I would say about 9 months before we started writing the story, because I had to get up to speed on a lot of it. You can't write about something unless you know where it comes from. And I know y'all know a lot about research too. It's such an important integral part when you're writing a story, because the one little detail you get wrong, somebody will call you out on it. So she's a brilliant, brilliant girl. And she's into linguistics, she's into history, she's highly credentialed. And I thought, well, if I can learn from anybody, it's going to be somebody like her, who's not only going to write with me, but she's also going to teach me history. So vital.
Mm. Have you been to Scotland?
Yeah. I am going to Scotland in August. We are going to be featured at WorldCon, which is an international science fiction fantasy convention. I am going to Scotland for 2 weeks in August, and literally I'm giddy about it. We talk on a weekly basis. We Zoom back and forth. We met every day, but we are going to have 2 wild weeks in Scotland. I'm going solo. We're going to have 2 wild weeks in Scotland, and the convention is 5 days. Like I say, it's an international convention. So we will be at the convention with our books, and then the rest of the time, I'm going to try to cram in as much of Scotland as I can.
I'm so excited for you.
I'm really excited too.
Look, I'm going to just be honest. You're on the Sex and Horror podcast, and when you're talking about cramming in Scotland, I'm just getting certain visuals. I'm like, those Scottish accents? Oh, no.
I don't know how I'm going to survive it, very honestly. I always say I've traveled extensively. There's not a lot of places I haven't been. I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of international travel. But I always avoided Ireland because I knew I wouldn't be able to tolerate the accents. I'd be weak. And now I've got Scotland, which is like Ireland on crack. I don't know how I'm gonna get by.
Are you single or
non-monogamous? 28 years with my fabulous husband, but I'm not dead.
Yeah.
You can go and admire, and you can kind of work your way.
As the men from Scotland and Ireland have said to me, it doesn't count if it's a different continent.
Well, you know what they say. You know what they say, Chantel. The best way to learn a language is to get a lover if it speaks that language.
Well, look,
I'm gonna get myself in trouble here, but I'm just saying. Yeah, the accent's going to be a problem. And just so if you're wondering why I wore pearls, in case I had to do any clutching.
Is your husband willing to give a hall pass?
I'm sorry. Well, he's being very, very gracious about it. When I first approached him and I said, I'm going to go to Scotland to this convention, he's like, oh? I mean, I have gone to a lot of conventions in the past couple of years since they opened up again and COVID allowed everybody to start getting back together post-COVID. He has no interest. I mean, he's a rancher. He's a country boy. He thinks what I do is fantastic, but he doesn't want to go do it with me. I invited him. I said to him, you want to go to Scotland? He goes, for what? Okay, good.
Dan, I got to stop you right there because I'm getting nervous. And I'm going to say that because Chantel and I have had to remove a couple of episodes because of what someone said. And we're concerned about their spouses. So I'm a little nervous. Are you good? We good?
We're gonna go to a different topic.
No, we're really good. He's totally cool with it. He thinks everything I do is hysterical. So I mean, yeah, no. After 28 years, there's not a whole lot of surprises there anymore.
Yeah.
So International Women's Day and Happy Women's Month and all that. So
thank
I feel like
y'all.
This is a celebration of that. You have some really good quotes on your Facebook page. One that I really like, I wish brilliant women had the confidence of mediocre men.
Mediocre men, right, exactly. We have to work so much harder, and I don't have to tell you two because I know you're both high-end professionals. And like we were mentioning before we went live, I know Chantel's got an art exhibit coming out this weekend. I didn't understand. I really didn't know. I knew you were artsy from Jay, our good friend Jay Mazur. Oh my God, I love her. And she had told me you were extraordinarily talented, but you had some examples. And I was like, oh my gosh, it is fantastic what you do. And Dicey, I know you've got a full-blown career. So I think that when we say the confidence of mediocre men, it just means that we have to dig a little deeper to let that light shine a little brighter. Even though we may know it's there, we've got to try a little bit harder so that everybody else can see it sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a great call, great quote.
It is a great one. I really like that one. I agree.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I've even been thinking about that, you know, the confidence of mediocre men. I see that a lot. And once you start seeing it through those lenses, it's really difficult to see it any other way. So even, you know, with a lot of things that are happening right now with Divine Feminine Rising, and I know y'all know what I'm talking about there, but, you know, men will complain about all kinds of different things and they can't even reach bare minimum stuff. It's like, but hold up, like, who are you to even say this? Like, you're not even doing the most basic. Like, we are having to do
so much more work.
For less recognition, less pay historically, less everything. And once you start thinking about that, really put that into perspective, it's like, you know what? I don't even need you. Just shut up and go somewhere. But mediocrity, I think, runs rampant, but patriarchy has them feeling like they're more important than they really are.
And that's I think that's been the age-old question for powerful women. I will take this back to Delavan House, which is the first book in the trilogy that Natasha and I have written. We intend to have the full trilogy finished by August. We got a little back-ended because Natasha had personal things to attend to. You know, life gets in the way with your writing sometimes. But we take it back to the witch hunts in Scotland in the 1600s at one point. Are you aware that more women were executed in these little towns in Scotland than any place else in the world? And it was mostly because of the heavy Catholicism and the heavy beliefs that were coming from England and the witch hunters and all that kind of thing. The reason these women were executed was not necessarily because they were witches, but we all know that. It's like it's the ones they couldn't control. The women who had free thought, the women who were healers, the ones who worked with herbs, the ones who provided services to women that didn't want to be pregnant or that had other problems that they couldn't get attention for from the local whatever physician would have been in charge or in control at the time. These were the women they wanted to eliminate. So us dealing with having to work so much harder at everything, this goes back to the 1600s and probably beyond that. I mean, it goes back to some of the earliest recorded situations that women were put in and faced with and had to deal with. So this is nothing new. And as you probably well know, in the genre that we prefer to write in, the darker genre, it's still pretty much a male-oriented ballgame. You can get into the dark romance, and you can get into some of those other blended genres, as I like to call it. But if you're talking about horror,
you
have to dig your fingers a little bit and kind of claw your way up a little. I'm very, very fortunate because when I started writing, it was COVID. I won't say it was easier. I will say I had more opportunity. So many more people started writing while they were at home during lockdown, or they decided that they were disgruntled with their lives and they were going to do something they always wanted to do, and this was going to be their big opportunity. It's much more competitive now. But we're coming into our own, but we're coming into our own because we're not mediocre. The shit we're writing is good. Don't ever say that we can't write it. Don't ever say that we can't be just as violent, just as visceral, just as graphic. We can bring the female experience to horror in a way that I will say men could never imagine. And one of the first things, you know, I've done some interviews and somebody said to me, well, you know, have you ever had any problems or anything? I only had one male that disrespected me. And when that was early on, and what he said to me, and y'all are going to love this, he said, pretty girls can't write horror. And I looked at him and I said, pretty girls live horror in a way that you could not imagine. And he just looked at me and he goes, well, I probably owe you an apology. And I said, nah, I wouldn't go saying what you just said to me to anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it's a prime example of what we're speaking to, that the confidence of mediocre men, pretty girls can't write horror. I'll tell you what, if you're pretty, or if you're ever perceived as pretty, or any of that word that goes along with it, it ain't been easy for you. Don't ever think for a minute. It's a whole different ugliness that you have to deal with on a regular basis. In a lot of ways, you have to fight that much harder to be taken seriously. So with our genre, we're really rising at this point.
Just like
he had to
address your competency, he has to talk about how you look at the same time. Like before he can even talk about your work, he has to say pretty. You know,
a diminishing statement though, right? Yeah. I mean, we've all heard things like that. Like you couldn't possibly be good at your job because we'll look at you, or you couldn't possibly be an extraordinarily talented artist or, you know, a gifted member of society. Well, look at you. I mean, you don't look like, I love when they say, you don't look like somebody who writes horror. What the fuck does somebody who writes horror look like?
Exactly.
But you get these statements, and I'm sure they're not intended rabbit ear quotes to be derogatory, but it's part and parcel of the whole quote, is that there's got to be a little bit of dig to try to keep you in line with everything, let you know that you're only on this level, not quite up here where you should, you know, where we are yet, kind of thing. It's crazy. I could talk to it all day long. I have 5 sisters, and we're all very rural, and we're all very strong, competent, professional women. And it's amazing. We get into these conversations. I mean, it's knockdown dragouts because we're all so passionate about the subject. So,
yeah.
Ladies, have you heard of, speaking of women living horror, have you heard how these Japanese men are treating women in Japan?
Yeah, and the women we're not even gonna be with you. They just cut them off.
No, like they are literally like, if you're young, pretty in any way, you have blonde colored hair, whether you're skinny or chubby or whatever, if you look like you don't live there, they literally will follow women. They will sit down and use their cell phones to look at women and their cameras, like looking to see what they're doing. They will literally come up and start touching you, and they're trying to talk to you in Japanese. They're using their Google Translate. It is beyond creepy.
Oh, like you should I would love them to try that with me.
It's crazy. Look it up. I was shocked.
I'm not Jay's stature. Of course, Jay's a Nordic goddess, but I'm pretty damn close. I would love for one of those tiny little men to come up and pull that crap with me, wouldn't you?
It's crazy. I was like, oh my God, it's so weird. It's weird.
There's a lot of that. You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned that because, I mean, I'm not a big TikTok girl, but every so often you're sitting there with a cup of coffee and you're kind of scrolling. They had a Miyako ceremony. They still have geishas in Japan. They were actually showing the ceremony of these young geishas, and they say, they're not courtesans anymore, but I think it comes from that representation of women. This once again, putting them on this platter or this level or whatever throughout history. So now you get these women obviously aren't from there, and they probably lose their minds a little bit. They probably think like they're loose moral women, or they probably think in their mediocrity they've got a shot with them. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, because that's all they're doing is trying to get them to go back to their hotel.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I haven't heard about that, Chantel. I have to do some research. What I was hearing about was something different, and I know that statistics wise there were women in, but I don't remember what part of the country or the world that it was in, that women were basically saying that they were done with the man, they'd rather be single, and there was a crisis of single men in that area. But I'm going to check into what you were talking about. That is interesting. Another quote that you had, Ruth Ann, on your page was by Giorgio Armani. Elegance is not about being noticed. It is about being remembered.
Exactly.
I love
that one too. I just read that recently. Don't we all love to watch, like they put out the fashion shows, like the spring and the fall, just to see the art of it? And I will say it's total art at this point. I mean, there's so many creative, beautiful things. Did y'all watch the Oscars at all? Some of the dresses and some of the presentations were just absolutely phenomenal. But I think it pertains to our writing too. In order to have longevity, you have to produce work that has an elegance to it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like we were talking about, it's so competitive and there's so many people writing right now, and you've got to scratch so hard to get a little piece of attention. I think that what matters more is producing work, whether it's written or art or anything.
Yeah.
That has some depth to it, that has some meaning to it. We're all storytellers, but you have to craft something that goes beyond that anymore. Because I give my readers, and I'm sure you do too, I give them credit for being highly intelligent. And especially in the way that Natasha and I write, because we do refer to a lot of history, we do refer to a lot of folklore and mythology. We expect that our readers have got a foundation in some of this. I mean, it's a fictional story, but the fact that we do cite specific incidents and we do play off certain things in history. And I think that's where the elegance comes in, is that you're creating something that's going to stand the test of time. It's not going to get read on a window and scratched off your Kindle. It's going to stay with you. You're going to run a hardcover of that. It's going to go on a shelf. So to me, elegance, it's a long burn thing. In other words, you're not a flash in the pan. People know who you are because you, like when we initially started talking, they know who you are. You've made a little emotional dent in them. You've cracked through the exterior. So I, for me, that quote means that elegance has staying power. You are somebody you will remember in a sea of mediocrity. To go back for other word.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give our listeners a little taste of who you are, you know, when and how you think, and so that it's not kind of like a probably get asked all the time, like, what's your inspiration? What are you writing? Who are your favorite?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try not to do any of that. Unless, you know, we ask questions like, who's your favorite porn star?
It also shows me that you care about who I am as a person and not just the work that I produce. And it's interesting because I did an interview last Sunday with Thomas Gloom, and he was fantastic, Into the Gloom. And he said, I got to be honest with you, he said, I've never read your work. He said, but I know who you are, and I know people who know who you are. And we had such a natural connection. And he said, this was such an easy interview for me because we didn't just run through those cat questions like you were doing, you know, what's it called? A deposition, pulling the word. Right. You know, you do deposition, you know. We weren't doing a deposition where they were canned questions. He knew about me, and I love that, and I value that, and I think it's really cool that y'all handle that approach.
Yeah.
So you've been a reader, you said, most of your life. You think that's what drew you to writing?
I think so. I'm also a product of Catholic school. Need I say more? So I went to a girls' Catholic school most of my growing up, and the fact that then we didn't get to type and we had to write everything. We had to write long essays. Did you guys have to do longhand essays?
Yes.
I can't. My grandkids, other people can't relate to that. When I tell my grandson, who's, you know, whatever age he is now, I don't know, he's a senior in high school, I said, you don't understand. We had to write all these things. We'd be running down the hall trying to, he's like, what? Because it's so different now. The way they learn is different now. The way they're exposed now. We had to do a lot of essay writing in school. And of course, I had to take 4 years of Latin, which did me a service in that it taught me a love of words and language. Yeah. And that works well for me. But we also had to do frickin' translation. And those had to be handwritten. So I think writing fiction came as a natural evolution from being in school and having to turn in 12-page papers and 10-page papers. And I think back then also, a lot of us kept diaries, remember, because Mean Girls and everything was very trendy at one point to keep diaries and to keep books and to keep journals and all of that. And I like to think some of these kids are getting back to that now. But I think we all did some secret writing that we hated our mother, or we hated our sister, or we wanted our boyfriends to drop dead or something. You know, we all did, you know, we actually were casting spells when we did that. You know, we'd write it and tear it up, or we'd burn it in our bedroom or hold it over the candy, you know, crack. Like the movie The Craft, you know, like you wanted Ginny Jones to break a leg during the football game or something.
Yeah.
I think that in our formative years, a lot of us of a certain demographic, we were influenced by some of what we were watching, reading, and doing. So I think we did write more than kids right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And with your knowledge of Latin and your love for Scottish, Irish, you know, those things that we were talking about earlier, did you read the Outlander books and watch the show?
The Outlander?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh, who could not watch Outlander? It's terrible though, Dicey, because I don't want to read ahead. I know she's working on the finale. I think it's number 11. Or whatever, but I don't want to read ahead. And of course, the program got stalled. We lost that during COVID and during the writer's strike. So we were kind of stalled in it. But those first few seasons, I mean, if you didn't fall in love with Jamie Frazier,
something
wrong. I don't care who you are. Everybody fell in love with Jamie Frazier just a little bit. I mean, he was the knight in shining armor, but he was a flawed human, but he was just, he was everything.
They cast him so well with Sam.
Oh my gosh, yeah. He's perfect in the role. And she is too. She's absolutely exquisite. And the chemistry between them, and I think it's just such a modern day I would call it a fairy tale in a loose sense of the word. It's like one of the ultimate romances. You know, the possibility. I don't know anybody. I don't know any female that I know who's watched the show that can walk past stones and not put her hands up against them anymore. You know, I think there's a little part in all of us that wishes we could transport and wishes we could have a lover like Jamie Fraser. And, you know, just even though it isn't always perfect between them, it's that fantasy that in her world, in Claire's world, became a reality. And I think we just love that. I mean, it's beautiful.
It also reminded me of what we were talking about before about like her being, well, she's going back to time and in the beginning anyway. And so she knows like medicinal type things. And so they branded her a witch when only using herbs and she was being a healer.
Right.
And because she came from a time and just have to sit up, to sit down and shut up. And that outside of the time period then that caused a lot of friction and everything. So I always feel like, now her character pisses me off a lot in some things that she does. It's everybody in trouble by bucking like that. Like you need to exercise a little bit more emotional intelligence. So when to say stuff and when not, because your life and everybody else's life is on the line. But she still does represent a whole lot in terms of women standing in their power and being who they are outside of the conditions of what she's having to deal with.
And she does encourage it with other ones. She takes on apprentices and helpers.
Yeah.
Especially in these more recent episodes, she's actually trying to teach others to be stronger and mm-hmm. to make them understand they have a choice. You don't have to just go fetch water and go bake bread.
Right.
You have a choice. You have power that you can use for other things, which I think is real important too. Yeah, everybody, you mentioned Scotland, and I think everybody just thinks of Outlander. I think it's just so romantic, for lack of a better word.
I think of Kill. I'll be like those weirdos in Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What?
I've asked Natasha, like, you know, she grew up in inner city Glasgow, which, you know, it's a big city, and she now lives in a rural area, and I'm like, like Jamie Fraser? And she's like, no. She says, but there are a lot of them. And what's so interesting is that they're so much older there, and they embrace their culture even more than we do in this country. And they hang on to it. Their traditions are very, very big and very rich. And there's still a lot of that there in day-to-day life. Like, you know, the holidays and the celebrations that we don't have here. There's still a lot of pagans in Scotland. And I mean, that was their first religion until, you know, the English came over and the Nordic came up and everybody came because the women were beautiful and they all wanted the women and the land and the resources and everything. But they take it back. I mean, there's reenactors in this country and we try to hold our traditions. They take it back a lot longer than 200 years and they live it. And to me, that's so fascinating because there are a lot of them that do live that lifestyle there. They wear kilts and they do their thing and they got their drums and their bagpipes and they so much more here where it'd be like a Renaissance game or a Celtic game or something. She's like, yeah, you're going to see them everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God, be so my heart. You know, it's just, I think they have a longer depth of culture to pull from. And it's very important to keep their tradition alive. So it's gonna be exciting to see how that kind of evens out.
I'm so jealous. I met my goddess crush a few years ago at Space City Comic Con, Tommy Flanagan.
Oh, I love Tom with the Glasgow smile.
Yeah.
He's a very cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He absolutely is. But so So, you know,
he's had a long career, Scotland. Too.
Huh?
He's had a long career.
Oh, yes, yes.
Love you on Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, that's right. What I really knew him from. Like, I mean, All About the Benjamins and all that. And I've seen him in other stuff, but I just loved his character in Sons of Anarchy. Oh, yes. Yeah. So I know we've gone all around the beaten path and everything, getting to know you a little bit better. Tell us about your books. Like, if someone was going to start and read the book from you, what would be the first thing that they would read?
If you wanted to, I've been writing for 5 years now, and mm-hmm. I am growing out my bangs and I'm about ready to chop them, and please don't let me chop them again. It's in that process, and I'm constantly futzing with them. I've been writing for about 5 years, and like I said, I started out in short stories. I probably got, 35 stories in anthos, and if you go to my Amazon author, it's just going and going and going. And then I did a little novella called The New Girl's Patient, which was really, really well received. I would say it's a little bit more extreme than I typically write, but it was interesting because a lot of my guy buddies, and I do have a lot of them, they're like, oh, we're so glad you went there and you didn't pull your punches. And when you went for the violence, you went for the violence. I tend to write strong female protagonists. I love strong females. Whenever I can use them. So when the Delavan trilogy, it's basically the story of a small village that sits between two imaginary locks in Scotland, and the serpent and the crow, because they're shaped like two locks. Now, this village of Bod has got a long history Their main production was iron, because at one point Scotland was the iron capital of the world, shipbuilding iron before Chinese started producing iron and killed off the iron ore business and export, as it were, in Scotland. And we did a lot of research on that too, pulled esoteric old things and cuttings from the mines and that kind of thing. But the villages, like most folklore and most folklore, we've got our typical recipe. You've got a curse, you've got generational trauma, you've got isolation. Typically it ends in sacrifice. And there's a house that sits up on across a water walkway, as it were, and this is Delavan House. And Delavan House has kind of a very dark history. And the village is beholden to Lady Lenore Delavan, who lives in the house, and they have to bind her by iron to keep her bound to Delavan House. Now, Lady Lenore Delavan's house goes back to the 1600 witch trials. Lady Lenore Delavan is, in essence, a witch, but she messed up at one point, and she was transformed into a Scottish creature of folklore, a Balin Seath, and that's a vampiric character. So here we've got this character that inhabits the house, but the village is beholden to the house, and every year the village has to have a ritual. I won't give away spoilers, but it's a pretty sordid ritual to continue to bind Lady Delavan to the house. Now, we crafted eight pages, I'm looking at my notes here from the next book, 8 pages of characters. We design out our characters. We tell on paper what they look like, what year they were born, who's their connection, what their physical characteristics are. Do they have any supernatural powers? What do they like? What do they dislike? Do they have conflicts with another character, which, as you know from writing, is very important. You've got to have your conflicts in there. We've got a whole cast of characters. Lady Lenore Delavan's got a daughter who is a classic Scottish shapeshifter. We've got Dark Fae. We've got the Unseelie, which come down, which are the Dark Fae from the heavens. We've got a lot of wild characters incorporated into this. We also have some human love that carry on with the supernatural characters. And
what's your heat level?
I'm sorry?
The heat level. you know, like.
Oh, with this one, there's a few. I would say it goes about a 7, and when it gets into the juicy bits, up to about a 9. But I will say that in book 2, and Natasha tends to write our juicy scenes. She spent a lot of time in the alternative world in Glasgow because she was a corset fitter. That's how she kind of got into the whole goth scene and everything. She's an intellectual. I mean, she's a brainer girl, but she got into it because she was working doing corset fittings. So she met a lot of the alternative girls, and she writes her scenes. When she writes sex, we even have guys tell us, holy shit, you guys did this really, really well, and you didn't make it weird. You made it seem like this is really a thing I want to be involved in, that kind of thing. And it was a huge compliment for us. So it does heat up in the scenes. We've got a blacksmith, of course, because of the iron, and the village still does blacksmithing. And he has a relationship with a supernatural character. I will say in book 2, there's going to be so much more of the quote-unquote heat, because we're taking it and we're continuing the story, but we're making it a standalone. And we've got some characters that we designed that have never been used before. We've got an edge walker. Her name is Threnody. She kind of walks a thin line between life and death. She's between this world and that world. One of my favorite characters is Pavona McQueenie. Pavona McQueenie is a young traveler. I'm sure you know the history of the travelers and the Celts throughout England and Ireland and Scotland and all that. And we are culturally appropriating because Natasha's actually connected to that in her own lineage. So we're telling an interesting story in that. Pavona's a wild little character because she can communicate with crows. And she likes to gossip. So she goes around whispering and stirring all the pots. And when it comes down to this ritual that has to be carried out every year, she's very instrumental in the ritual. So in book 2, which will come out before August, it's called The Delavan Diaries. We are turning up the heat because we are going more into the wild fantasy, dark romance kind of situation. I'm currently writing a character that, gosh, his name's Kevin McQueenie, and he is a traveler enforcer, meaning that he is, and I don't want to give too much away, but his job is basically executioner. He's a hitman, but Kevin cursed because he did something he shouldn't have done with his community. He's got some unusual attributes, and he's also got things that he can't do anymore because he's part demon at this point. He's probably one of the most creative, wild, interesting characters I've ever written. And yeah, I'm going to have him have sex with people, probably humans and not quite human, but he's really interesting because he's tattooed, and his tattoos are images of what he's had to do as an enforcer for people. So he's a very violent, horrific character, but he's also probably going to be one of the, most desirable, probably, for some of our readers.
So
this where we are now is I'm writing this half demon. He's no longer human, but he's neither here nor there. He's cursed, but he's going to have some wild stuff. So we're definitely turning up the heat, as it were, respect. And then book 3 of the trilogy will be called The Servant and the Crow. And those are the two locks on either side of Delavan House. And we'll bring the story full circle there. So in other words, each book is a standalone, but it will, you can read it in order and you'll know the characters and the world that we've created. But yeah, I start when I write the scenes, and we write in Google Docs. We have a master document. We pass it back and forth. I'll write characters, plug it in. She'll write characters, plug it in. And then we'll get on at the same time and we'll start editing. We have a wild process that we've developed. And I start laughing. I'll write, I can't write them doing that. And she's like, well, I can. Click, 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 click. Then we read it. And I'm like, oh my God, did we just write that? Because that's the fun part of it. Because you almost feel like you're doing something naughty, but who's going to say anything? Who's going to say you can't do it? You know, you got full grown women typing these scenes with these characters, and they're always human. And I don't know if you're talking about this with any of your other it's a lot of fun when creatures that aren't human get to have sex. You know what I'm saying? You can have them do things and wild. You're only limited by your imagination and what your own moral compass tells you can get away with writing. Right. So we have a lot of fun with the scenes.
Sounds fun.
It is fun. Yeah, it is fun. And it should be fun. Writing should be fun. It's the hardest thing I have ever done, but ultimately it should be fun. When you read those panel edits and you close the laptop and you're like, yeah, this is good. This is fun. This makes me feel good. And then you get
on the Ruth, do you have any real life horror? I'm sorry, Chantel, were you saying something?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Ruth Ann, do you have any real life horror stories?
Any real life horror stories?
Ooh. Yeah.
Mm. You mean like supernatural and kind
of... Yeah, more like that. Yeah.
Pretty much what we're living every day lately has been a horror story.
Yeah, let me clarify. Not like the trauma of whatever,
faces,
but like real life supernatural encounters.
Oh gosh, yeah. Quite a few actually. Quite a few. I live very rural, very quiet here. I'm surrounded by fields, and it's a kind of a historical area. My husband's fourth generation Native Texan, and there've been a couple of encounters, strange things, and my house is over 100 years old. I live in an old stone farmhouse that we've rebuilt onto, and it would have been so much easier almost 30 years ago to burn the ground and build another one, but we just keep this one going. And there has been a girl that sits on the steps sometimes. I've never seen her face, but she's got a long dress on and she's got brown boots and she just sits on the stairs. We don't use our upstairs unless we have company because it's a fairly large house and it's just Mike and I now. But we've seen her on the stairs. And I've traveled extensively. I had a couple of wild encounters in South Africa. And I think it's just because, once again, when you go to these places that are very old and a lot of things have happened there, I have this theory that the ground carries memories, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a cemetery. It can just be where a tragedy happened or a massacre happened or where people were displaced. I've had a couple of real strong incidences, once in Africa. And once in China. Things like that to me are really powerful. Gettysburg. I went to Gettysburg with my husband. I had to stop. I was so overwhelmed going through some of the battlefields and some of the, I just felt like I could hear them talking around me and just... I think when you're in these places that carry a history of a people, or like I say, where things have happened, and we may not even know what's happened there, because when I traveled internationally, I didn't always know the cause, but when I asked people about it, they were like, oh yeah, this happened here, oh yeah, this house had something terrible happen in it, and I have had quite a few of those experiences, yeah. I think especially women, I think we're more empaths. I think we feel things more deeply.
Yeah.
We allow ourselves to feel more deeply. And I think that we're more tuned into some of these things. I've never been afraid of any of the experiences that I've had. They've never been a negative experience. But I also don't open doorways. I don't play with Ouija boards. I have a scry mirror that someone gifted me. I don't mess with those things. And it's not a religious thing because I'm not a religious person. I just have whatever. I think if you treat people well on earth, you treat people well after earth. But I don't open those doorways either, because I think that right now there's a lot of volatile emotion in the world. And I just think that sometimes it's there. Do I believe in good and evil? And do I believe in the supernatural? Yeah, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to go to some even older places.
Right. When you
over to Scotland. So right. You're going to
be interesting to see how I feel in that respect. And I know you guys have probably, isn't there like a Victorian house y'all go to? I've yeah. seen the pictures of y'all with Jay. Does that house have feelings?
A lot. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I figured as much. Yeah.
Yeah.
And 133-year-old.
Is that your house or just a house in the area?
It's a friend of mine's. It's okay. A friend of mine's bed and breakfast.
Oh my God, it's spectacular. But I sensed from looking at the pictures, like when Jay was posting and all that, it's kind of a powerful place. It's not just the decor. There's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very mm-hmm. energetic. It's right across the street from a cemetery, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cemeteries fascinate me. They don't scare me. I always tell people, if you want to know the history of a place, go to the cemetery. I really like old cemeteries. I like to read about the people. I like to, unless you're there for nefarious purposes, like you're correct, collecting grave dirt for voodoo or something like that. I think there's a peace to cemeteries. I don't fear them. Do I believe that you shouldn't look back if you go through a gate? And do I believe that you should leave coins? Oh, absolutely. Am I superstitious? Yeah. I think that comes from being Irish, and it also comes from being respectful. So
what was that you said about grabbing some cemetery dirt? I got my notepad out. I said something about grabbing cemetery dirt for hoodoo.
Oh, hoodoo. Yeah, yeah. If I see you in the cemetery, now it's really interesting because there's actually a crossroad not far from my house, and there's not a lot of them around anymore because, of course, the encroaching development everywhere. I'm still pretty rural. There's actually crossroads, and every so often there's something in the middle of the crossroads, and you don't disturb it, you don't do anything like that if you see it. And because South Texas, there's also a very prominent Hispanic culture, we've got a lot of Santeria, and we've got a lot of other small religion, I would say, little details that get practiced on the side of the road. There's altars, there's little jujus, there's things all over down here. And just because we're rural doesn't mean it's not there. But yeah, if you go into the cemetery and there's a girl there around midnight digging with a teaspoon, silver teaspoon, you better walk away and leave her do her business, because she's getting some graveyard dirt to do hoodoo, you know what I mean? Or witchcraft, yeah. Whatever you want to call it, you know, hoodoo's being the other version of it. There's so many versions of it in this country, kind of thing. I leave that stuff alone, but I'm very respectful of cemeteries.
Yeah. Chantel teaches me a lot about what Maria, you say? Chantel?
Say it again?
You teach me a lot about Santeria. Is that mm-hmm. the name of
it? I mean, Santeria is a little bit more of like witchcraft mixed in with like Catholicism.
Right, right.
Yeah. I know Chantel is very knowledgeable in that area.
It's fascinating to me. Any of the study of, basically, they came from an organized religious belief, and they kind of went off into folk rural areas. In other words, they might have been practiced in a pure form at one point, but then the real people got a hold of them, the believers, as it were, and then they started practicing, as it were, on a simpler level or a ground floor level or a roots level kind of thing. I think it's fabulous. I think everybody should be able to practice whatever the hell they believe in. You know, it's just, but I'm not going to mess with that girl digging with a teaspoon in the graveyard.
Chantel just had me watch last night called Poor Things, I think it was. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Emma Stone just got her Academy Award for it. Yeah. Did you like it?
It was a whole episode on that one.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I love that they let her just be, and yeah. I don't think anybody else could have played that role so incredibly. That's been one of my favorites. But I'm a Saltburn girl. I had so much fun watching Saltburn. I mean,
Saltburn was great.
I just absolutely love that movie. I mean, it's just so freaking decadent. You know what I mean? It just gets under your skin. Yes. I will say I didn't understand the people that were shocked by it, because there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't any shock for me. If you've ever loved someone obsessively, which I've never done, but if you've ever been loved obsessively, and that's basically what it came down to, it was a very unhealthy love obsession. But to me, the creepiest part in the whole movie, the one that made me go, was where he was sitting across the table, the breakfast table, and he had just liaisoned with the girl the night before. And he didn't say anything, and he shoved that croissant across the table to her, and the look on her face, it was just so manipulative, and it was so male, like, you're going to eat this, because she had an eating disorder. It was just so wrong. It was like, you know, you're sitting across from dinner from somebody, and they're like, is that all you're going to eat? You know, just that, to me, that was like, that was the creepiest part in the whole movie. Oh, hell, I was all about the lick in the bathtub and the hump in the grave. Oh, come on. You know what I'm saying? You know, get it out anyway. Grief is a strange animal. You know, do what you do. You know what I'm saying? But that's my favorite movie that I've seen. I mean, Poor Things is great, and it deserved all the accolades, but Saltburn was one of the most original. To be able to put that on film and have it so widely accepted and talked about, to me, that was an elevation of the art. You know what I mean? Like, we've come a long way. We can sit in the living room. I wouldn't suggest watching it with your family, but, you know, it was streaming, so you could technically watch it with your family in the other room. That says we've come a long way, which I really like.
Yeah. Chantel, anything you wanted to add in there? We have group that give us the closing words and all that.
Not really. Nope. I think we're good. I'm so happy you came on. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I was so looking forward to it. And then when I was having trouble with the Skype, I'm like, oh no, please work. Please work. Because you never know out here. Our connection's much better than it used to be. But what have you guys got coming up? What are you working on? I know you've got your out show. Are you still, what are you writing?
I'm writing a second volume to the book I released last year.
Okay.
It's religious horror, very weird. And
okay.
Religious and horrific.
I love it. Sounds incredible. Sounds wild.
I have like four or five different irons in the fire that I'm all trying to work on at the same time. So I have been going out working on it even while I'm on vacation. I have decided I'm not doing any legal work during this week, and I'm just working on my writing. So the family, they go and they ride their bikes, or they go and walk, or they go and do the golf course and the bumper cars, not bumper cars, but the race cars, whatever you call them. Yeah. And I don't have time to go right then, but I'm having such a hard time these days staying awake. Like, whatever it is, even when we had this writing thing, horror group, and all of us got together, I was falling asleep at the table. Like, I have
just... I don't like the time change. I don't like this. We've had weird temperature swings in Texas. We've got this time change. I just said that to my husband the other day. I'm more fatigued than I've been in ages. I feel like I've never caught up. Like, you're kind of constantly trying to catch up and get another hour in there. I can't write unless it's, I have to do it in blocks. I know some people can sit and write for like 15 minutes. I kind of have to sit there and know I've got 2 hours to do nothing but try to get the work in and get the work down. Are you guys doing any of the conventions?
We're doing and we're going to see you at Texas AuthorCon. And
you will not see me at Texas AuthorCon. I'm very, very sad about it, and I was sad. Yeah, but I got a good excuse. I am going to go with my daughter, who lives in New York, and my grandson, and two of my sisters, and we are going to go to a field in, what is it called, something South Carolina, and we're going to go to Kid Rock, Jason Aldean, Miranda Lambert. We're going to go in a field, and we're going to a two-day rock. We're going to like a country western. I have no business being there, but I've just decided.
Hey!
So I had already gotten the tickets, and it was a conflict with the dates that Meryl had picked. I'm not going to StokerCon this year. It'll be my first year in a couple of years, but everything conflicting with Scotland. Basically, I'll come home from the event, the concert that I'm going to, and then I turn to go to Scotland. And it's a lot of travel. And, you know, from South Texas, nothing's easy. It's 2 or 3 planes to get any place. So it was just a conflict this year with the summer and the plans that I had made with my family. But to be able to go with them, and I love all kinds of music. I'll listen to anything. But in fact, somebody just outed me as an opera lover recently. But to be able to, if you see Miranda Lambert in Texas, the tickets are like $1,000. I'm going to go see her, and we've got VIP tickets for like 2 days, and we're like $500. Because I don't know how I'm going to survive this. It's South Carolina in July. Look at this face. This face does not go near the sun.
Having blast.
Lots of hats.
It's gonna be a lot of fun, but I will miss Texas AuthorCon. I am gonna write a story for Meryl though for his Western anthology he's got coming. I will plan on next year. Jay says the one I have to do next year is the Houston. Is it the film one?
Houston Horror Film Festival.
Yeah, she says I have to come to that. She says it's her favorite one. She absolutely loves it. Houston's doable for me. I mean, I can drive that myself, and it's a, you know, it's an easy, it's a, compared to even going to Dallas. So yeah, I wanna try to do some different ones next year. So I think I'm mixing it up a little bit this year. And I'm already booking some different things into next year. So It's just because, like we were saying, there's so many of them now. And the ones in Texas are all Houston, Dallas. I know Ghoulish Book Festival has got theirs going on in San Antonio. But once again, you get into conflicts with family and holidays and scheduling. And because we live here, if there's a breakup north, everybody wants to come visit. And then, of course, we got the eclipse. And of course, we are right on the direct path of the eclipse. So, we think we'll come visit for a couple of days. Stay with you, obviously, everything. So, you know, you kind of, I have a really big family. I have 7 siblings and then everybody that goes along with that. Wow. Yeah. So it's a shit show a lot of the time. So the good thing is we got the room for it. And as long as we can do it, we'll do it. So I'm kind of skipping out. So I won't be at TNT, but you guys got a lot of people coming to that one. I'm glad it changed the venue, because that venue last year was packed in. That was a cramped up venue. So yeah. I think it's going to be outstanding. And I think Meryl is one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And I think whatever he produces will be a quality class act. So you got that coming up, and you're doing the Houston one? For Halloween or anything like that? There isn't really a great Halloween one in Texas. I wish somebody would do it.
Ruth, tell everybody where they can find your work and follow you on the socials.
Ah, easy peasy, go to www.brazenfolkhorror.com and it links to everything, all my socials. Natasha's on there. We've got a lot of updates, a lot of information. We put links to our interview. Like everybody, trying to keep up with all the socials and websites and everything is a full-time job. I hate it.
Yeah.
I wish I could get like a little assistant to just do all that for me. Yeah. But if you go to our website, Brazen Folk Horror, you can link to everything, and we're all over the place all the time. So yeah, it's real easy. Usually I've kind of steered away from X, which used to be Twitter. I know a lot of people still there, but Facebook and Instagram are doable. I try with Twitter. Twitter scares me. I mean, TikTok scares me. You got to really want to do TikTok. That's kind of a whole other animal in the whole zoo of social media.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm pretty easy to find. I'm pretty much everywhere.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you again real soon. Take care. Enjoy your vacation.
Have a fun.
And good luck with your art show. Post more pictures.
I will.
Okay, great, guys.
Good night, ladies.
Rest of Women's Month, right?
Women's History Month and Women in Horror Month. So it's an awesome month.
Yes. Bye.
Thanks, guys.